Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined this week by my buddy, Jordan McNamara, who we had on the program last year when he released the first edition of his Analytics of Dynasty book. Back this year with the second edition updated. You guys know over the course of the offseason, we're going to get really in the weeds with Dynasty. So I thought, you know, kind of just starting all of these podcasts with Jordan was a great spot. Jordan, welcome to the show, man. How we doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me back on. It's good to be part of this dynasty movement you got going on here.
So this is just where I want to start. First off, is I do think we saw a huge change in the way dynasty leagues are played over the last 3 years, where unless you have Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, and honestly, even to a lesser extent, Dalvin Cook. Like, if you tried to trade Dalvin Cook right now in your dynasty league, you would not get what any trade calculator said that you could get. You could try and trade him right now. I did one of the $77, you know, just random startups on FFPC last year, got stuck at the 12 spot. I took Dalvin Cook. I tried to trade him in season for Jonathan Taylor, got rebuffed. Tried to trade him in season for a first round pick and CeeDee Lamb, I think, got rebuffed. How does that change your startup strategy? Because obviously, you know, in startups, we want to win. A lot of the times, you know, kind of my ideal startup strategy is, I think JJ coined this term, late round quarterback, the productive struggle, where, you know, you're not punting year one, but you're not trying to win year one. But when you do that, a lot of the times these running backs you take, by the time you're ready to truly have a dominant team, they're already phased out. I mean, look at Todd Gurley. What was Todd Gurley's ADP in 2018? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really high. So I think it matters what your aim is, right? And so for me, one of the things I found in researching this 2021 edition of the Analytics of Dynasty is I think value is as an overplayed strategy, meaning that I don't think we predicted particularly good in terms of like future market value. And I don't think that even where we do, it's tough to extract it. So, I mean, to find a deal for someone, you need to have 11 other people, right? One of those 11 other people agree with you, and you need to find a match that you find appropriate, right? So, I mean, I was out trading. I was trying to trade Nick Chubb, for example, in a league this week. And the amount of suitors that I had is pretty low. And even the suitors that I did have, like there were a couple of teams that just, I was like, I just can't figure out how to make this deal work.
He's a great example, actually. So Nick Chubb, if you go to Dynasty League Football and you look at both their ADP tools and their rankings tools, Nick Chubb, top 20 ADP, top 15 ranking in Dynasty, go try and get that value for him. Go try and trade that value for Nick Chubb. No one wants to pay it. I did a trade with Rich Rebar in a Superflex league we're in, where I traded Nick Chubb and Ben Roethlisberger for a first, a second, and Henry Ruggs. And that I am sure I lost that trade on any trade calculator, but I had a team where Nick Chubb wasn't useful and Ben Roethlisberger wasn't useful. So mining that value back was huge for me. But just trading those not quite blue chip running backs, let's say, you know, 4-star running backs, you just are going to have to take a value loss.
Yeah, I think the best way, if you're trying to do that, like I think you have to find a way to pivot off of him. So either pivot up or pivot down, right? I think going from player to picks is where you pay a big tax on that.
Yeah.
But it's much easier to go from, like, I don't know, there's not a ton of difference between like Nick Chubb and like David Montgomery, outside of the fact that their price is very different right now. In terms of, you know, I think Nick Chubb's clearly the better player, but as dynasty assets, I think they're relatively close. And so you know, that's a way to extract it. I think if you're trying to sell a player like that, you got to figure out a way to pivot either within the position or across positions. Whenever you go from player to pick, you're going to pay a pretty big tax just because people, you know, love their picks. So I think one way to think about it is that. I think the other way to think about it is like, I don't, when I draft, I'm not so much worried about preserving the future valuation. And this is how I end up building kind of contrarian rosters, because I'm not really worried about being super attractive to other teams. If I build a good team, that will come. But I'm not necessarily worried about, oh, how's this player's value going to be in 24 months? Because we're really, like, the research from the book, this in the 2021 edition, it's pretty clear that we're terrible at predicting that. So yeah. I didn't even try and play that game. And things that, like, it's even more frustrating because you'll sit here and you'll be like, all right, like Mike Evans is on, like, he's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame, like, with 4 or 5 more years of this level of production. Like, he's he's going to end up in Canton, and we're going to be like, oh, from like 26 to 32, we were like just dumping on him. And it's like, all right, you know, so how do you sort of react to that? Well, I just think you fade it, right? You just say, all right, like, I'll ride it into the ground, because historically his profile has been really productive through his late 20s and his early 30s. So I'll just ride with it. So that kind of puts me in a little bit of a contrarian setting. So I'm not as attractive to other teams, but I'm sort of crushing them on the production side, which is, I think, the more important aspect of the equation.
Yeah. So the book starts off with the 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years philosophy. So why don't you go ahead and just kind of break that down and explain it as a frame of reference for this conversation?
Yeah. So I stole it from a book written by a woman by the name of Susie Welch. And she used the idea of 10-10-10, which is you look at your decisions basically in 10, you know, the consequences of your decisions in 10 minutes, 10 months, and 10 years. And for Dynasty, you have to reshape that because, you know, 10 years is just that's people thinking way too long. So I did 2-2-2. I think it's 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, right? And I think different aspects of your roster should focus on different parts, right? The really cheap parts, I think people on the back end of people's rosters, I think they get too worried about playing a long-term game, right? And what is really important there is a 2 week or 2 month productive window from a player, whether that's a running back, typically it's a running back, maybe backup quarterback at Superflex, something like that, where they can really shift. If things break right with the injury to a starter or whatnot, they can really shift the balance of your team and the balance of your league. You just think of Mike Davis and Giovanni Bernard, Wayne Gallman this year. I mean, Mostert and Damian Williams in prior years. I mean, those guys can really shift the thing. And again, are they that valuable for a couple of years? No, but it outside the top 200 in a startup draft, that's not really what you should be focused on. So that's one way to look at it. And the other thing is, I think you look at decisions and you want to figure out, you know, what are you sacrificing? Right? Are you sacrificing the near term for the long term? And think about different decisions, because different decisions you make are going to be have a different impact on the time or on your team in different time spans. And so thinking about players, you know, who is really productive in a multi-year window, who's really productive in a year-to-year window, right? Thinking about the decisions that you make now and sort of looking back on them. Right. As you sit here right now, think about what you're going to think of this decision in a couple months or a couple years, and then look back on it. I think that'll actually help you make better decisions, because a lot of times we get sucked into saying, oh, I don't have a need for this, or I have a need for this right now. And in 2 months or even 2 years, like, it's probably not going to be that, right? It's probably going to be something different. So you just kind of focus on drafting really good, good players that fit, a good productive profile, and you sort of worry about that later. So I think about making decisions in those different windows and how that helps your team.
Which I think makes a lot of sense, because basically people evaluate every transaction through, am I trying to win now, or am I trying to punt it off 2 years down the line? And I mean, there are like a couple leagues I'm in where because of the profile of guys I invested in, I have a lot of teams with Dak Prescott. I have a lot of teams with, Christian McCaffrey, like just guys who got hurt last year. So I now have this portfolio of teams that just sold off, you know, the Nick Chubbs, like a lot of those guys with like really great 2 year value, but now it means I have a portfolio of teams that I'm going to be paying, you know, thousands of dollars in Dynasty League fees in 2021 for teams that have no chance of winning. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, I definitely think in some of those situations, I went a little bit, you know, I went a little bit rash. And that's actually a question I have on the sheet here. So what is your general philosophy to responding to those massive in-season changes? You know, so for example, you had, like, you know, Team X had George Kittle, Dak Prescott, Saquon Barkley, right? And you're coming into the year, you're like, I'm a favorite. I'm going to crush everyone. I have so many points. No one's even, you know, and through 3 weeks, you're 3-0, you lead the league in points. And then in week five, all those dudes are on the IR and you're just, you know, you're absolutely hating life. So kind of what is your philosophy to responding to those in-season switches and value?
Yeah, so I have a metric I call warp, and something I call the rule of seven, which I think is really helpful to think about these things. And so the rule of seven basically is if you drop your average points over the course of a 13-week regular season by 7 points, that's a win difference, right? So if you drop it by seven, it's an extra loss. If you increase it by seven, it's an extra win. So if you're losing a player, and the way that math works out, seven, it's rounded down to seven, just so it makes it sound right. But the way it is over the course of a season, it's 97 points. So basically if you, lose 97 points over what you expected, you can expect to lose an additional game. If you add 97 points, right, that's it. So you gain an extra win. So what I think a lot about is how to make the decision is if I lose Saquon Barkley, you know, I put out some data in the right after his injury. If you lost Saquon Barkley, how many more games do you think you're going to lose? Right. How many games is that injury going to cost you? And I think people pretty massively overreacted. People are saying 2, 3, 4 games. The odds are that's probably like 1 to 1.5. Right. That's essentially what the math would say, because once you go to try and replace him, even if you're replacing him with a replacement level player, it's probably only going to cost you like a game and a half. And that's assuming that you can't do better than just a replacement level spot, which I think you probably could. I mean, if you had Wayne Gallman, it probably didn't cost you a win. Right. I mean, if that's right. you sort of look at it like that. So again, if those add up, right, that hurts a lot. And so I think about, I went out and I bought Saquon Barkley in a couple spots, just because I think a lot about what you need to do to capture a championship is a top 8% outcome. You need to finish 1 out of 12.
Yeah.
And so embracing that, right, that means you should take risk, right? You shouldn't be crazy about it. It should be sort of calculated risk, but you need upside. And I think, you know, drafting someone like, or trading for someone like Saquon Barkley when they're hurt makes a lot of sense. And I think don't take 60 cents on the dollar after he gets hurt, right? I saw those deals too, where people were taking, oh, I need help right now. And ultimately it probably didn't help them win a game, you know? And so that's really one of the things I'd caution people on. I think the impact of one specific player, even the great ones, is probably overstated. It's probably not more than, it's not more than two wins. Like even McCaffrey's like massive year 2 years ago, he won 2.5 games over replacement. But those two guys, I mean, there might be two a year that get that high in terms of that impact. Like Kamara was one this year. But it's really rare to get that sort of impact. So when those guys get hurt, you know, just be careful on overestimating, how much it's going to hurt you.
So this is something I was thinking of when, kind of reading through the table of contents of your book. And this is an idea that I've stolen from Rich Rebar, as I do with most of my good ideas. I steal from Rich or JJ. You know, most fantasy games are not close, right? Go through, and if you're listening to this, literally pull up your NFL app, your Sleeper app, your Yahoo app, and go look at all the games you played this last year that were even within 20 points. Like go back and look and count, like, you know, how many could I have won with literally getting zeros. And so how this manifests itself in Dynasty is I think people worry too much about having a strong roster, you know, 1 through 20, 1 through 30, where generally speaking, the idea should be you want to have as many blue chippers as possible. So a redraft example, I had a team in the FFPC main event with Rich and Evan and Pat Thorman, where we drafted Derrick Henry, we drafted DK Metcalf, and we drafted Russell Wilson. We also drafted, you know, Austin Eckler, Odell Beckham, you know, just all these guys who got hurt, didn't play, didn't give us points during the regular season, but we went 11-1 in the regular season and we won top points in our league, basically just because we had those unicorn players. And how that manifests itself in Dynasty is you will see people do the 4-for-1 trades, right? They trade Michael Thomas, they trade the dollar Michael Thomas for four quarters, although Michael Thomas from 2020, not that great of an example, but you will see the four quarters for $1 trades in Dynasty quite a lot, especially when picks come in there, right? If you start hanging out second round draft picks to people, those are probably overvalued. Those are probably a silver dollar, you know, in those trades. Do you agree with my line of thinking that you kind of always want to be on that dollar side of the dollar for four quarters trade?
Yeah, typically. And one of the things I think people worry about too much is, you know, consistency, right? And like, you need elite upside, right? You need upside, and you need to, you know, people worry too much about the consistency angle of it. So in the book, I actually went through, I had a pretty big sample of leagues I went through and looked at what's the margin of victory in a given week, right? Or what's the margin of victory in a game? And what I found is like 17.8%, which is 2.3 games for an individual team during the regular season is decided by 10 games or less, which you say, okay, like, oh, 2.3, that's a lot. 26.8 were decided by more than 50, right? When that's 3.5, right? So 3.5 games are on average are decided by right. more than 50 points. So again, I think we overstate probably the one person impact, right? When you think about, oh, I made a bad lineup decision, like it probably didn't matter. You know what I mean? Like that's the thing I don't get super concerned about it, right? Because ultimately I'm just trying to figure out over the course of a season, how do I score as many points? And I don't really worry about it that much from week to week, right? Just let's see how many points we can score and score as absolutely as many points as we possibly can score. And that's making your lineup better, you know, doing the 2-for-1s, the 3-for-1s to sort of make your lineup better. You know, I just did one today that, again, yesterday, it was just all about hunting upside because my team's very good. It's probably the second or third best, or first or second best team that I own. And it's ultimately, I'm just trying to capture a really elite upside. And that's kind of the deal that I'm making, you know? So I think to do those, you should really be on the good side, right? You want to be on the right, going from, you know, doing one of those trades to go from 5 wins to 6 wins doesn't help you. Going from that trade to go from 8 wins to 9 wins, that probably get you a buy, right? Or 9 wins to 10 wins almost certainly get you a buy. And that's really what you're trying to shoot for. So I do think where you stand in the league hierarchy matters too.
Yeah. So that definitely does matter. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is going to be team specific. Like, you know, you have a sick team, but you're rolling out Dalton Schultz at tight end every single week. It might make sense to, you know, trade your third bet, like the specific construction of your team. You have, you know, some sick third running back, like David Montgomery is your third running back. And you also have Nick Chubb and Derrick Henry. This would never be a team that I would own because I don't have that many resources and running backs, but that definitely would be a situation some people could find themselves in. And, you know, you do that, you do David Montgomery and, you know, T.Y. Hilton and a third round pick to get T.J. Hockenson on your team or something like that. You know, I think those are some scenarios where it makes sense, but I do think most of your energy with your dynasty roster should be centered around the idea of, I want to have 5 of the 20 highest point scorers in any given season or something like that. Like the 1-12 scoring or the 1-10 scoring or whatever, I think matters a lot less than finding as many of those high, you know, absolute maximum point scorers as possible.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And because the difference between, you know, I think it's overstated, is the difference between like 60 and 100, right? Because like, relatively a flat tier, you know, people are like, oh, this person's a really good wide receiver 3. I'm like, he's like a couple tenths of a win difference than like wide receiver 60, right? So what are we really worried, you know, what are we worried about? And so again, I think you have to factor in a player's profile, right? So if a first round wide receiver through 6 weeks is performing as a wide receiver 3, like, okay, like that's different than, you know, someone that's, you know, a Cole Beasley type, right? That's just a whole different career arc. You know, so I think you have to factor in, there is some long-term longevity and value to your roster through some of those guys in that wide receiver 3, if they're sort of on an ascending arc of their production profile. But by and large, like if you're selling a guy, you know, if people are like, oh, he's a rock solid wide receiver 3, I was like, that has very little use to me, you know, cause I don't Right. What's it, how's that helping me really?
Right. And I think that you make a great point there. People do tend to overrate the difference between RB24 and RB36 and wide receiver 30 versus our wide receiver 50, because especially in the off season, we look at those things in their year end numbers and we don't look at their, you know, week to week deltas. And like Cole Beasley, great example. Cole Beasley finished wide receiver 24 this last year. And if you had him sitting on the back end of your rosters, one, you probably never started him. But two, you also wouldn't be able to trade him for anything too, which is, and that is, I think, a small edge, you know, where trading for some of those productive players in season who have absolutely no future value if you're a competing team, you know, like for example, I had some non-competitive teams where I randomly happened to have Cole Beasley as like my wide receiver 8 or something. And if someone would have offered me a 4th round rookie pick for him, I would have taken it. I would have just clicked accept, you know, whatever. The points weren't helping me. The 4th round rookie pick was more utility. And so those are some in-season trades where you can, you know, you can really win. Okay. The next thing I want to talk about is the vicious rookie draft cycle with picks. So this is again, something that dynasty players are very familiar with right now. Well, maybe not even right now, let's say in March, that is when rookie picks are going to be at their absolute zenith of value. All of your league mates, they have their sights set on Kyle Pitts. They have their sights set on Travis Etienne, on Najee Harris. But in September, a lot of people who play Dynasty, well, a fair amount of people who play Dynasty don't really watch college football. They're not really that hype. You know, they're not that hip to the prospects, and picks get undervalued at that time frame. But people don't, because they're undervalued and because they're not really on the forefront, people don't think about acquiring them at that time. So, you know, do you have any strategies in the book or just strategies that you use yourself to kind of capitalize on that cycle of rookie pick value where it really trends down after the draft and really trends up right before the draft and right as rookie drafts are happening?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I tend to be, so we come into Dynasty and everyone wants to play Dynasty to play a long-term league, but then everyone thinks in those 2 months and 2 week windows. Right. And so, and that's like, oh, I can draft, you know, Trevor Lawrence to be my quarterback 1 in Dynasty. And like, that's going to solve all my problems. Like it's probably like in the near term, it's probably not going to do that. Right. Historically, that's not been that common for that to happen. And you know, people do this all the time with receivers. Oh, I have a need at wide receiver. Like the last place you should ever go to address need at wide receiver is a rookie, right? Like that's a horrible bet, right? That's like a, you know, 1 in 5, 1 in 6 bet for them to help you as a rookie. Even the first round guys, it's a low hit rate. What I'm willing to do is like, I'll be patient. Right. And like, I the most contrarian strategy you can have in all of Dynasty is to be the most patient person, because it's actually like having a 2 year window is on the patient side, because people say they want to play a long-term thing and then they make constantly counterproductive strategies. So what I'll do is I find this is particularly true when my teams are good, right? I'm not going to seek out, you know, specific wide receiver help. So I'll let someone make that bet. And, you know, I don't think the market's particularly good at predicting the order of which guys are good, right? So example, last year, Jerry Jeudy was wide receiver 1, you know, CeeDee Lamb was 2, I think Rager was 3, and Jefferson was 4. But that tier was like very similar when you looked at their breakout age, when you looked at some of their, you know, when you sort of looked at the base rate for their hits, like it was pretty much the same. And when you sort of sat there and looked at it, like no one would have predicted that Kirk Cousins would be the best quarterback situation to play with, right? Because that's why, you know, people were dumping on Justin Jefferson, but just think about those quarterbacks and how quickly they changed. No Dak, Drew Lock sort of was a dumpster fire, and so was Carson Wentz, right? And so Kirk Cousins ends up being the best quarterback situation of those four, right? We're horrible at predicting. We're horrible at it. So I think a lot of times figuring out ways to sort of like let other people make those bets, it's a great way to pick up assets. And whether that's a future pick, you know, whether that's additional picks, I think that's a great one. The other one is I'll take a discount, right? Like I'll go, and I wrote about this in the book, like someone a couple of years ago to try and move Damian Williams was impossible. And to try and get a 2020 in 2019 to try and get a 2020 pick for him was really, really difficult.
Well, unless you were in a league with me. Oh man. Yeah. I sunk so much into freaking Damian. Oh, just terrible, man. Yeah. The opt out was the worst.
Yeah. And so the, and this was so like, this was 20. So in 2019, he's coming into 20, you know, in the 2019 regular season off that good end of 2018. But everyone's looking at a good 2020 class and is like, I'm not going to pay that. So I sort of, I actually said, well, like, all right, I don't think Damian Williams is going to be good long-term. What's the better bet, right? Like, is the bet to make that he's not going to be good in 2019? Or is the bet, because if he's not good in 2019, that sort of helps my pick. But he was the starting running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, if he didn't get injured, he was going to probably help that team. I said, the better bet is actually the 20, you know, taking a pick another year out, right? Because I doubt, just historically, it's really rare for guys where he came from to be good for three straight years, which is what it would have been, right? And right. Have no competition and have no, you know, and so what I was really, so I got a 2021 pick and it was a two quarterback league. And I said, I'll take the couple year discount. Like, I'll take the couple year discount. I got back a couple other pieces because I was willing to take a time discount. I said, I'll do that. And of course, within 3 months, the guy's rebuilding saying that he wants 2021 picks. And lo and behold, I get the 101, right? So I'm sitting on Trevor Lawrence in a league. And again, that's, you talk about taking some asymmetric bets, right? Taking things with huge upside. Those picks, they're random, especially a couple of years out, and people don't think of them that way. That's an easy way, again, just to play the patience game on folks. And Damian Williams, you know, from a warp perspective, the odds are that he wasn't going to make a huge difference in 2019. But if he was sitting on the roster in 2020, the odds were that I was actually helping me increase the value of my pick. So just trying to make those bets and thinking probabilistically about it, I think are really helpful in terms of how you can, increase some of those things and sort of go countercyclical on the pick front.
So a more specific question I have about rookie values is, what does your research show for guys who are really disappointing? So for the 2020 class, that's like Jalen Reagor, Henry Ruggs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, honestly, to some extent. Like, I know he got benched for Darrell Williams in the conference championship and the Super Bowl. Like, he will still have his believers. I've done a couple best ball drafts. He kind of goes in like that third round range right now. What does your research say about these, you know, disappointing, highly valued rookies?
Yeah, that's a great question. So position matters quite a bit. And what you'll see is I actually did for this was probably the most fun research I've done in terms of looking at guys in terms of how they change in value. So I looked at it a couple of different ways. Like, you can find out what their starting value is in terms of, as rookies, what their startup valuation is, and then sort of compare that over years. Right. So I did it with all four positions because I think it's important to think about profiles and think about guys that, drop in, you know, about how value is going to move, right? And the funny part is people are like, oh yeah, wide receivers are undervalued. Like, nope, they're a 50-50 shot to be above their valuation in future years, right? The first round guys. So I think that I think thinking about those guys and thinking about what they do, right? We have comps for this. We kind of know, right? So for example, like, you used one, if Jalen Reagor's value drops this year, if his ADP is worse than it is in his rookie year, which it looks like it's going that way, but we'll see, there's still time for that to change. 29% of those guys actually uptick at any point in their career, uptick into year three above where that rookie ADP was. So I call that a rebound rate. So that's a pretty low rebound rate. One thing I would say is, like, once players start moving in a negative direction, you got to be really careful because those things can happen very quickly and get away from you. That's particularly true for guys that haven't been productive yet. You sort of look at the 1-3 shot of that is Judy, Ruggs, and Reagor, right? Those are the three guys from the first round this year that are worth less than they were a year ago. So you figure, I mean, by the odds of it, one of them is going to reclaim that valuation. Who's it going to be? Right. So that's one of the things I think about. The other thing too, is I would say, I think that the hit rate on it. So we know, like, I look at base rates a lot. So if you miss your rookie season as a first round wide receiver, your odds of hitting go from 53% down to 45%, right, in your career. Right. So you're still actually, you're still basically a coin flip, but the value can really get away from you. So you kind of have to judge those. Like, what do I want to, and Rager's an interesting one because I have him on a lot of leagues, is what bet do I want to make, right? Like, because I kind of know the two different roads, right? I kind of know where they point. What bet do I want to make? And so I think for me, I might look to, you know, use him. It's not, he didn't take a huge loss in value. It took a couple rounds in startup pick valuation, which might be, you know, two or three spots in a rookie draft, maybe. That's about, you know, three or four spots, maybe, depending on how big the move is. You know, what do I want to sort of reclaim that now and get the pick liquidity of that? Or do I want to try and hold out because I still like the profile? Like, I like the profile, but I got to know that, like, if he doesn't hit this year, it's a falling knife that's happening. Value wise,
which you never want to be catching the falling knife, right? That's like the, because like everything else, you know, dynasty is a market you're trading based on future expectations versus what has happened. Yep. So far. Okay, a specific 2020 question.
Yep.
How do you think the combineless NFL draft is going to affect dynasty? I mean, you know, I do think there will be some process of standardizing, you know, whether that be the NFL sending, you know, NFL teams sending colleges like, you know, laser timers and everything. But I also think that it will maybe impact some skill position guys where they go a little bit later than normal. Like, for example, I think that the only pass catchers to go in the first round are going to be the two Alabama wide receivers, Ja'Marr Chase and Kyle Pitts. Whereas, you know, I do think Rashad Bateman, Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore, even, I think these are guys who could have crept into the first round in a normal year. Do you tend to agree with that analysis?
I think if you were to give me like the over on 4.5, I'd probably take the, if you combine wide receivers and tight ends, I'd probably take the over, cause I think it's going to be a good class. So it's really interesting cause you hear, you know, coming from an analytics background, like we kind of know that college production is like helps guys be productive in the NFL, right? Like right. It sounds so quaint to say, but the NFL constantly, you listen to NFL speak, right? And, you know, there's podcasts with GMs on them and stuff like that, or, you know, retired GMs or former GMs, or whatever, former executives. And they're like, oh, we got to draft for traits. Well, like, we know that doesn't work, right? Like, you know, well, you got to draft Ruggs because he's really fast. Like, well, we know his production profile is terrible, right? Like, what are we doing? So that's one of the things that I look at and I'm like, all right, like, you know, you just sort of say maybe these guys won't actually get vaulted up, right? They won't be taking trait based picks. They'll actually have to go and, you know, look at tape and look at productivity. I mean, I think the smart franchises, and the smart dynasty owners, I think can really capitalize, right? Because when things move and you can sort of be on it, do your research and adjust, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think this opens up a level of uncertainty. I hope there's like 7 or 8 guys that go in the first round because it's going to open up a great trading opportunities. And I think if you just say, all right, like, listen, and like even Ja'Marr Chase, like he didn't play this year. Right. So again, I'm not holding that against him in terms of, I totally get why he opted out. I understand it, but he hasn't played in a year. And so we don't know what he looks like, you know, and some of the reports out of the Senior Bowl were that guys that didn't play this year we just had a tough time, you know, integrating into that because they didn't have all that muscle memory going. I think all of that stuff's possible. So I think actually zigging when everyone wants to zag trading up the board this year, I think, you know, just taking a lot of shots or taking, you know, sort of diversifying away from these really elite expensive shots this year, when we kind of know that it's essentially random amongst these guys in terms of how they produce, especially first round guys. I think that's definitely the way to go. I mean, ADP is not predictive. When you right. sort of tier these guys together, when you look at first round wide receivers, like the guys with higher ADPs haven't been like meaningfully statistically better than guys that went later in the round. So why do that to yourself, especially in a year where there's so much uncertainty? Just appreciate it as random and say, all right, if I can like make one bet, you know, just arbitrage it. If I can make one bet for a lot, you know, a couple bets for a lot cheaper than one expensive bet, right? That's kind of the way I think about it. And so we'll see if teams do that. But I definitely think that's the reaction in Dynasty.
So, okay, let's kind of move the conversation to this direction before we get out of here. Where are you at with some of the incoming rookies this year? Who are some of the guys that you are likely to draft on a bunch of teams, and who are some guys that you are looking to not be as invested in? You know, I think kind of the way it's setting up for me right now, Devonta Smith probably not going to end up on any of my teams. He's likely to be in regular leagues. I think he will go at ADP of 3 in the first round. And I think in Superflex he'll go 4, because I think Trevor Lawrence will either go 1 or 2 in every single league. Where are you at with some of these first round rookies?
Yeah, so I think, again, I think about a lot of profiles, right? So I think the Devonta Smith sort of fading, that one's it's going to be an easy one. We'll see sort of what the end of the first round looks like in terms of wide receivers. And because I think that'd be pretty nice if you can get some of those guys sneaking in there and they go later part of the first round or into the second round of rookie drafts, which I think is totally possible. Superflex is going to be really interesting because I get the love for Trevor Lawrence. But when you sort of go back and look, the hit rate's not that high for like guys that produce multiple hits, right? It might be like 50% for top 10 guys, depending on how you want to measure it. It's like 50% for top 10 guys. And when you, again, when you look at the guys in the top 10, the guys that have gone earlier, when you sort by draft, when you sort by the specific pick they went in, or you sort by the rookie ADP, the guys that went higher haven't been predictive, right? And so we've seen this, and we've seen this with Josh Allen. You know, we can call it, we'll just call it the Josh Allen rule, that when the market slips on, and Justin Herbert is a good example, when the market slips on these guys that are in the same draft range, again, it's top 10, it's being pretty selective. When the market falls on one of them, like that's easily the target player. Right. That's easily the target player. So I think that's going to be pretty possible this year, because I think you might get 4 quarterbacks in the top 10. And so playing that game is going to be really interesting and attractive. You know, it's the same thing with the wide receivers, trying to play that game. I think one thing I would say too, is I think Kyle Pitts is, if he's going to go in like the top 6 of drafts, especially in the top 6 of non super flex drafts, that's going to be the most expensive tight end ever. In terms of going back to 2008, when we have rookie draft ADP, I probably wouldn't make that bet, because even when you look at it, the hit rates for rookie tight ends are really low, and you know 60% of them fall in value, right? So, I mean, you kind of know that if you do a startup draft in 2022, you're probably going to be able to get Kyle Pitts at a cheaper price than you will in a startup draft this year, or his equivalent rookie pick this year. So that would sort of be the thing that I'd caution people about. Again, looking at, I have a lot of that stuff in the book of just saying, all right, what types of profiles do we want to take? And I think that's really the thing you need to look at and pay attention to, and avoid making, you know, just avoid making bad bets at particularly at expensive prices.
So specifically for Kyle Pitts, I will provide the dissenting opinion.
Okay.
You're making a very asymmetric bet there, where if Kyle Pitts doesn't work out and he turns into, you know, Eric Ebron or Jason Mar, like, you know, obviously those are different things. Like, he can either be a 0, he could be a back end tight end 1, a top end tight, you know, a guy that you could start, but obviously, you know, doesn't provide that huge value over replacement. Yeah, you lose out on the first round pick, but you'll also lose out on, it's not a dichotomy, because sometimes you'll lose out on Rashad Bateman too. Sometimes you'll lose out on Jalen Waddle too. Like, sometimes those guys will not produce. So it's not like Pitts has a 30% hit rate and the guy you would have taken instead has a 100% hit rate. You know, maybe it's like a 50%. But the times where Kyle Pitts does become the 90%, it's actually even more useful than Jalen Waddle or Jamar Chase or whoever you could have picked there hitting their 90% because of the insane value over replacement. Because if Kyle Pitts becomes George Kittle 2.0 or Noah Fant 2.0, right, and he's posting 240 point PPR seasons, those are insanely valuable. I mean, we're talking like 150 points, you know, 100 points over the tight end 12 or something like that. So I agree with your analysis that it's a bad bet, historically speaking. It's a bad bet if we're just looking at median outcomes. You're 100% right. I'm especially on the FFPC, where it's tight end premium in a lot of these rookie drafts, I'm actually with, you know, 6, 7, 8. I will definitely be looking to take him. Now, the guys I would not take Pitts over for sure, and this is obviously subject to change before the draft, I would take Chase over him. I would take Waddle over him probably, but I wouldn't take Javonte Williams over him. I wouldn't take Rondale Moore over him. I wouldn't take Elijah Moore, and I wouldn't take, you know, Trevor and single quarterback Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, any of those guys, because the quarterbacks have the exact opposite problem where, you know, if Trevor Lawrence is QB10 for the next decade, sure, like that pick worked out, but it didn't like super contribute to you winning your league in a single quarterback. So I am going to be taking the bet on Pitts at six. The only guys I for sure would not take over him are Chase, Bateman, Etienne, and Harris. So I think maybe there's even a case to take him at five, just because that payoff is so good. Now, he's not going to retain any value as a rookie, cause he's not going to produce as a rookie. Tight ends literally never do. It's like, if you get 800 yards and four touchdowns as a rookie, you had like a Hall of Fame rookie tight end right. season, you know,
right.
But I will be taking the bet on Pitts the same way. You know, and it was a lot cheaper, but like I have Cole Kmet in like 70% of my leagues, yeah. just because first tight end drafted, he was going in the third round. The times where Kmet pays off, it's just so, and I think the same argument can be made for Brevin Jordan, Pat Freiermuth, those guys mm-hmm. this year, where in the third round, just start looking for tight ends with draft equity, because if they start to produce points, you just crush that draft slot by so much.
Yeah, Kmet was a great one too, because I mean, it just is people ask me, how do I hit more in the later rounds? Like if a day two running back falls there, you take him. And if a second round tight end falls there, you take him, right? Like those are just easy ones. That's just, yep. That's, and avoid wide receiver. Like if you do those things, like you'll really increase your hit rate. And so that's absolutely. So I think like the, one of the easiest, and people don't love to do this in one tight end, especially when there's not a premium, but you're just really, you're giving yourself another usable asset. Right. And that's been consistently true in that range of the draft. So yeah, I'm with you in that. And I get the argument for Pitts, and you know, we'll see how the pedigree works out too. In terms of if your hunch is right, I think 105, 106 is appropriate. If there's going to be more wide receivers in that, I think it'll be interesting to see how that market shapes, because it might push him back too, right? You know, people might not want to, go up as high on him, because there will be other options. But if your hunch is right, basically that there's going to be four pass catchers, right? And if there's no running backs, like that is probably going to slide him at 106.
I really can't see Etienne or Najee going in the first round. I just did my first round mock draft last week, and I really don't see it. I mean, and maybe it happens, right? You know, no one saw Clyde Edwards-Helaire coming to the Chiefs last year. Josh Jacobs to the Raiders was not a surprise at all, but the NFL has just kind of moved on past that stuff, and neither Etienne nor Harris are like Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott style prospects. Like they're very good. They grade out very well, but they're like mm-hmm. a tier below that. And that, mm-hmm. that B plus tier of running back prospects just doesn't really have an argument to go in the first round.
Do you think that the NFL has, cause I've heard this, that the NFL is sort of on the weight on running backs thing. I sort of take a slightly different view of it, just because when you look at the past 2 years, I'm not sure we can say that they've made that decision, because the supply is so good in the NFL right now in terms of young running backs that there's just not a lot of demand for them. So I think it's actually different in terms of like, oh, running backs don't matter. I'm not so sure that they're saying that. I think that there's a maybe it is, right? Maybe we look back in 5 years and say, yeah, that's the decision that they've made. But you've seen other like pretty heavy analytics teams like the Ravens and the Eagles go on day two with them. And, you know, I actually think it's interesting, because we'll see what the Packers do with Aaron Jones. But if you sort of go on day two with a running back, I know it's not that popular to say, I actually think the reason why they're doing it is a financial incentive, because what you can do is you can get a guy locked in on a relatively cheap deal, and they won't.
And if you want to pay them, you can pay them a year early too.
Yeah. And you can sort of lock that in. Like, I don't, I haven't looked at it specifically, but if the Ravens let, you know, they have let Ingram walk, and if they don't sign anyone, right, if they don't spend money there in the offseason, like, they're going to be at least the bottom five, if not like the cheapest running back core in the league. And that's one of the incentives of actually taking someone that you can kind of depend on in the second round. So I think I get the argument that, that it's not, yeah, you know, I sort of agree that running backs don't matter. You shouldn't go early at the position. I'm not so sure that that's the decision the NFL's made. I think it's a supply thing more than a more than their demand for them. So we'll be, it'll be interesting to watch for, but that's definitely a trend that I'm interested in. Cause this year, like if you look, go back 2 years ago, the Jacobs class just wasn't that good. And then last year, all the teams,
but Jonathan Taylor, Jonathan Taylor was an A plus running back prospect. Like, and he wasn't even the first one to go. So right. I think to me, Jonathan Taylor going in the second round and not even as the first running back off the board is well, also it's a signal that teams want different things out of running backs, that they need them to be able to handle 50 receptions a year. And that wasn't the way that it, people viewed Jonathan Taylor because he played at Wisconsin. Now,
so that was a mistake, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Now, I mean, I'm not intimately familiar with the 2021, like not this class, but the next class of rookies. Maybe there's some running back coming who's like 20 years old, going to run a 4.42 and is 210 pounds and is going to catch 60 passes. And, you know, maybe that running back goes in the first round. But I do think, like, especially like top 10 picks, I don't know if we'll ever see another running back go in the top 10 of the NFL draft for a long time.
Yeah, it's interesting because it hasn't been that long since we've seen him, and it was a pretty consistent trend, but it's been 2 years. Like, just when I go back and look, there just wasn't – I mean, a lot of the teams that were up there just didn't have a demand for him. So I think if in three or – and these things are cyclical too, right? If 3 or 4 years the running back crops – the running back crop is just older, right? You might see a cycle back where they say, hey, we need to get some guys. I'm not so sure that – I don't know, with all the – bad decisions that we see, some of these suboptimal decisions we see some of these teams make, I'm not so sure that they're on the smart, you know, sort of the smart, we think Gettleman's really not going to take one, you know what I mean? Like, right. He just has one, right? So he's not in the market for one right now. So it'll be interesting to see, like, when some of those guys cycle out, what'll happen.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, a lot of those boomer GMs are getting replaced too.
That's so true that, too.
You know,
that's true,
yeah, too. Like, yeah. And the NFL still has the problem of, you know, just recycling guys through jobs and coaches, but it's happening less often. And, you know, we saw like with Patricia and stuff, those guys are getting a shorter leash, like, and, you know, punting on fourth downs is down, you know, more teams are more aggressive going for it on fourth downs. And I think all of that is a slow trickle because teams are watching, you know, like guys like the Ravens, teams like the Ravens, teams like the Bills just kick their ass just based on pressing those edges. And yeah, football coaches are really slow to evolve, but it's not fun to just, you know, it's just not fun to get your ass kicked by a team that is, you know, not as good as you, like, which is what happened. Like, the Packers are one of those teams where their roster was great, but they just did not press the edges at all. The Packers drafted bad, were not aggressive on fourth downs, kicked it a lot, punted a lot. And it cost them over the course of the season.
Yeah, for sure. Rodgers has got to be sitting there looking at what the Buccaneers did and was like, you guys brought in all these 1 year guys, right? That made differences. Fournette, yep. Gronk, and Antonio Brown, like, that played really well down the stretch. And you got me what? You know, like, it's got to be a frustrating experience for him to look at that and see where Tampa Bay ended up, and he can't get any help in the near term.
Yeah. All right, man. Tell people where they can purchase the book, and we'll go ahead and get out of here.
Yeah, you can go to analyticsofdynasty.com/shop. You can find the book there. I've got it. It's available for immediate download. And so you can, you know, hit purchase and then it'll come right to you. And I also have a package there. I really think that the best way to consume it is to consume it with the 2020 edition as well. So to consume both of them together. So I have a bundle there with the two of them you can find. And also you can take a look at analyticsofdynasty.com. I'm doing daily dynasty podcasts through the off season. So I have my dynasty tiers up there. So you can go ahead and get a membership for that as well. And sort of follow along with that. That's been a lot of fun to a different podcast each day, talking about something different. It's been a lot of fun. So yeah, analyticsofdynasty.com. You can find all that. And then you can follow me on Twitter at McNamara Dynasty.
All right. Yeah. Everyone, follow Jordan and read the book, and we will continue to all, you know, just be cranking out these dynasty pods throughout the course of the rest of the off season.